I'm gonna be the man who's lonely when I'm two. And when I'm dreaming, well, I know I'm gonna dream. I'm gonna dream about the time when I'm with you. When I go out,
when I go out,
well, I know I'm gonna be the man who goes along with you. And when I come home,
when I come home,
yes, I know I'm gonna be.
Across Australia, this is Callan Murray with the National Indigenous News. The Federal Treasurer Josh Frydenberg spoke on Tuesday about the overrepresentation of Indigenous people in prisons, saying rates are unacceptably high. He says his government is working on new, ambitious targets to reduce the number of First Nations people in jails, scrapping a previous draft agreement to reduce rates by up to 19% by 2028. The Morrison government will take a higher target to the states and territories next month. Speaking with the ABC, lawyer Sophie Trevitt from prison reform group Change the Record says they welcome any commitment from the government and hopes they will take note of all the recommendations laid out before them.
Change the Record has reached out to the government with five key asks to end the mass incarceration of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. We need to change the laws, so that means repealing punitive bail laws and mandatory sentencing, stopping sending people to prison for unpaid fines. We need to decriminalise public drunkenness. We need to stop imprisoning children and raise the age of criminal responsibility to at least 14. We need to end racist policing and implement all of the recommendations from the Royal Commission into Aboriginal deaths in custody. If we see all of those things put in place, then I think we would believe that the government is serious about taking meaningful action to end black deaths in custody.
More than 80% of Indigenous people found with small amounts of cannabis are pursued through the courts by New South Wales Police, The Guardian reports. Data shows that between 2013 and 2017, New South Wales Police disproportionately chased prosecution of Indigenous people for minor drug offences. Just over 82% of Indigenous people found with a non-indictable amount of cannabis were pursued through the court system, compared to 52.29% of non-Indigenous people. The data, compiled by the New South Wales Bureau of Crime Statistics and Research, also shows police were four times more likely to issue cautions to non-Indigenous people over the same offence. During the same time period, just over 11% of Indigenous people were issued a cannabis caution, compared to 40% of the non-Indigenous population. Aboriginal Legal Service Chief Executive Carly Warner says the data shows young Aboriginal people are being forced into a criminal justice system which often they can never get out of. The federal government has agreed to include a new Indigenous incarceration rates target in a refresh of the Closing the Gap Agreement. A coalition of peak Indigenous organisations have been working with the Morrison government to establish a new framework and overhaul of the Closing the Gap targets, many of which have failed to achieve their goals since it was established in 2008. The move comes amid global protests against police brutality and has focused national attention on the over-policing of Indigenous communities here in Australia. Lead convener of the Coalition of Peaks, Pat Turner, says while the inclusion of targets is important, action can be taken now to achieve those targets.
If you look at the why people go to jail, a lot of people are in there for minor offences, as we would classify them, I think. Non-payment of fines, inability to raise the bail. So separate out the serious crimes from the minor crimes and look at alternative arrangements for sentencing or even being charged in the first place. But there's a lot of justice reinvestment measures that have been outlined to governments for a long time.
We'll have sport up next.
For a quarter of a century, the Courier Mail has been bringing you the stories that matter from more than 200 mobs from around the continent. Whether you're Bundjalung or from Bidjara country, Noongar, Ngunnawal, Waka Waka, Wetherong, we've got you covered. To subscribe or let our mob know about your business, event or organisation, head to our website at www.couriermail.com and follow the links. The Courier Mail, the voices of Indigenous Australia since 1991.
Program sponsor.
To sport now with the ABC.
Melbourne D's naming Harley Bennell in their side to play Carlton this weekend. The 27-year-old broke down when he was announced at training that he would be playing. His career has been a roller coaster because of injury and personal issues. He'd played just two games at Fremantle in the past 4 years after starting his career at the Gold Coast Suns. Well, he'd come over to Melbourne in the pre-season and the Demons have rewarded him after training strongly during the season's suspension.
And that's the latest national Indigenous news.
Hi, are you having a baby and don't know where to go for checkups? I'm Danella. I'm the new midwife at Woodchopperon Health Service. Come into Woodchopperon and I'll help you stay healthy and give birth to a healthy bub. Or if you have a family member or a friend that's having a baby and doesn't know where to go, tell them to come in and meet me. I'll give you advice on keeping healthy throughout your pregnancy. Come into Woodchopperon at Moynard Street, Menora, or call us on 4080 1000. Woodchopperon Health Service, keeping our generations growing strong.
Station sponsor.
Not sure who to turn to for legal advice?
Want someone who knows what you and your mob need?
And need to find someone you can trust? Call Murrawa Law.
They are the nation's leading independent Indigenous legal firm and the legal advisor of choice for government, business and traditional owner groups in the commercial and Indigenous law sector.
They are 100% Indigenous owned and help their clients with the right advice in native title, joint ventures, leasing, property and lots more.
Visit murrawalaw.com.au or call today on 07 404 13088. Choose a law firm that understands you.
Murrawa Law. Station sponsor. Little things, big things grow. From little things, big things
grow. Hey, hit me!
Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trendy Trev. Going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416.
National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
Yes, a very good morning, you deadly mob. Welcome back to your Yarn and Circle, the Murray Grapevine. It is National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev. Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. You know it, BBM Bumma Brit Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. And you can have your sabre calls on that deadly number, 1-800-422-416. I'd like to acknowledge traditional owners of the land we broadcast from and to all our traditional owners across the deadly country of ours. Welcome back to National Talk Black. Have you saying yarn up strong, you mob too deadly. When catch up with the first man on the at the cab rank here. We got Bo Spearman on the line, 989 FM Les Talk host, also Indigenous activist, strong black fella, and talk about the Black Lives Matter protest in Brisbane and Aboriginal deaths in custody on the line. BS, Bo Spearman, good morning, my brother. How are you?
Good morning, Trev. How you going, brother?
I'm fantastic, my brother. Thank you for coming to the program. First of all, let the mob know who you mob, where you're from.
Definitely. Bo Spearman, Gumaroi, Kuma, Marawari. Was born in Western Sydney, but grew up on the south side of Brisbane.
Represent. Thank you, my brother. Speaking of represent, the Black Lives Matter protests in Brisbane, Aboriginal deaths in custody. Look, a fantastic movement. People come together. It's sad it took the death of a brother in America, in George Floyd, but it shined a light on black deaths in custody, over 430-odd. Look, still a space that's not rectified and need to come into the situation. Yeah, brother?
Definitely, brother, definitely, you know. Sadly, yeah, like you said, you know, it took that brother over in the States to sort of galvanise, you know, hundreds of thousands of people across Australia, you know, to sort of talk about police brutality, you know, and, you know, credit to Aboriginal media all last week to say and to remind Australia, just one second, just to remind Australia that, you know, this happens here. You know, our black media played a really pivotal part last week to remind, you know, the masses and the broader public here in Australia that, you know, for since 1991, no police officer or prison officer has ever been held criminally accountable for the death of an Aboriginal person in their custody.
And the sad thing is, you see non-Indigenous journos overseas from Australia talking about, yeah, it's sad what's happening here in America. It doesn't happen in this country here. And even a Prime Minister said that. I mean, very sad, 430-odd deaths and no conviction for black deaths in custody.
That's it. It's very, very sad. And it's ironic too because, you know, last week the Prime Minister tried to chime in and say, oh, you know, like, are those protesters and rioters in America, you know, really need to sort of, you know, take a page out of Martin Luther King, you know, and not be so violent. Like, Martin Luther King participated in non-direct violence protests,
mm-hmm.
but then also he was sadly assassinated in a very, very violent way as
yes.
well. You know, and he was one of the most peacefulest sort of, you know, leaders that they had
exactly.
around that time as well. But then, yeah, you know what I mean? It's sad to see, you know, our Prime Minister and you know, non-Indigenous journalists from Australia reporting on the issue back here and sort of, you know, keeping that narrative and maintaining that, you know.
We're looking at your own backyard is what we're talking about, brother.
That's it, that's it. You know, and we saw, I believe it was Friday, when we were organising up here in Brisbane, we got the phone call from the mob in Sydney and Melbourne to say, hey, you know, the police officers are really clamping down and don't want us to rally. And to the point where in New South Wales, I believe it was the New South Wales police, you know, took the organisers to the Supreme Court to overturn and say, hey, you know, I mean, we want to ban this rally under the you know...
COVID-19
as well.
Mm.
That's right. But at the same time, you know, letting, you know, sports go back, you know, letting the restriction of these laws as well. You know, and a credit to each organiser in each sort of state as well, because one of the things that we did up here in Brisbane, I can say proudly, is that we had well over 50 to almost 80 marshals,
mm-hmm.
and then we broke them up into three different teams. One was legal observers, so, you know, checking that, you know, and recording that police officers don't harass or brutalize our community members and our mm-hmm. mob. We had another team that was medics.
Yep.
So they had water, they had bandages, they had, you know, Panadol, like if anybody
yep.
was having headaches, they had face masks. They had
sanitizers. Yep.
You know, and then also we had the normal marshals, the Murray marshals, to sort of, you know, protect and make sure the rally keeps going as well. So we had, you know, and one of the things we did with those marshals is we put them near Rugby Street train station, we put them near South Bank train station, South Brisbane bus stop. So any direction that the mob and the people were coming to, before they even got to the rally, they were handed hand sanitizer and I was getting face masks as well. Funny thing, you know, like I think it was like nearly every third person at the rally had a face mask and had hand sanitizer.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, no police officer had, you know, face masks on. And it was funny stories, like, you know, that they were there to enforce that people were wearing and, you know, adhering to social distancing and you know, like these sort of health messages that they've been, you know, giving out as well. And one of the things as well that we told people is, you know, after this rally, you know, make sure you go to your local Aboriginal, your local AMS.
Get a test,
you know, COVID-19 test. Just if you're worried, any you know, that you may have contracted at the rally as well.
Well, we got a bit of flack when March was on regarding COVID-19. It's still coming out of it, and we are not out of the woods with COVID-19. But the mob was saying they were willing to risk COVID-19. Non-Indigenous people and government would say a bit selfish in that sense. It's between it's a yay and nay on the situation, isn't it?
Definitely, brother. You know, like, this morning on the program, we had Fred Leone. He's an Aboriginal man, Brisbane Blacks. He's got ties to Batchelor Country and also Gadawa Country, I believe, up that way as well. And one of the things that he said, one of the reasons why he was there is because, you know, he's a survivor and a victim of police brutality. Like he was raw this morning on how he told his story, you know, and me and Karina, my co-host, we were sort of choking up just listening to this brother's story.
Yeah.
And he just laid out, like, this is why I'm here. And he goes, you know, I'm sure this is why lots of other Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people came here as well, is because, you know, they face discrimination and racial profiling and vilification, you know, in the broader community, but then also, you know, police and prison guards as well. So, like you just said, it was something that mob was sort of willing to risk.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, they're risking their lives in one hand to get COVID-19, but then also they're risking their lives to get out the message that this happens to us in this country every day.
Look, it's sad that COVID-19 is upon us, but with the virus or without the virus, black people are going to march, and in recognition of our lost brothers and sisters, and unfinished business in regard to the government need to take control of what's happening with black deaths in custody. Yep.
Definitely, brother. Definitely. There's a lot of unfinished business. But then also what you're saying on Woodja and all these other communities, you know, it's funny that, you know, politicians and media are coming out and slamming the organisers of all these different protests in different parts of the country, saying it's selfish and, you know, there's a risk to the community. Aboriginal communities took the first step in isolating our communities in different parts of this country, especially, exactly. You know, for the mob up in your way as well, you know, and mob
Aboriginal,
you
know, communities.
Communities all over the country, before their state and federal and territory governments sort of stopped in and supported. Mob were already talking about isolating, you know. Mob were already talking about, you know, well, how we can survive within this pandemic as well, because we know
the vulnerable people.
Communities at a high risk and vulnerable as well. But then also as well, what just happened as of last night, the organisers in Adelaide of the Black Lives Matter rally was just shut down by the police. Wasn't granted approval on the basis of there's too many people, you know, and the risk of COVID-19. But also in the same instance, you know, they're opening up stadiums to
football
punters and also for attendees to go to the AFL as well. So on one hand, you know, they're really giving it to mob, and then on the other hand, they're opening up to the public to go to sporting events.
And there lies the phrase again: one rule for one, different rule for another.
That's it. And then also up here in Brisbane and in Melbourne, about not even 2 weeks ago, there was a G5 protest. You know, so all these white fellas protesting and black fellas there as well, protesting against G5 towers and vaccination, all these other things. And from what I heard, you know, the cops were chatting with them and very nice with them, and even the Prime Minister that came out and said, you know, people have the right to or freedom to express protest. And then, you know, not even 2 weeks later, you know, the Prime Minister and his same politicians that weren't hard on his other protests come out and sort of, you know, talk real bad about, you know, on one hand, you know, don't acknowledge that this happens in this country, but then also say, hey, you know, these people are selfish for, you know, not thinking about their community.
Look, there is a top story coming out in the news regarding one of the attendee at Black Lives Matter protests in Melbourne contracts COVID-19. That was the risk we were taking. They're talking about another protest in Sydney tomorrow night, but the authorities haven't given the thumbs up for that. So we may be at a standstill there with that much as well, brother.
Yeah, I haven't heard much from that rally at the moment as well. But yeah, no, I hope everything goes well.
Sure.
We're just followers in Sydney. You know, and if the mob in Melbourne go again, but then also the mob in Adelaide as well, they're a bit smaller than us fellows in Brisbane and other states as well. So hopefully they you know, get back out on the streets and you know, take control of you know, the voices and put that out there as well.
Well, whether it goes ahead or not, you know, we had marches over the weekend. It virtually stopped the nation with capital cities, but it got the attention of government, of media, and also the movement globally for black people and black deaths in custody and black people being brutalized by police officers. Yes.
Definitely, you know, that has always continued to happen, and our mob are always going to fight, you know, whether it's in a COVID-19 pandemic or whatever pandemic, you know. The fact of the matter is, what mob was saying on the rallies as well is, you know, black people have been living under this pandemic of brutalization and murdering and no justice, you know, for 200 years in this continent, you know, so we can sort of survive through these other pandemics as well. And, you know, our health services and our other organizations, they've been doing amazing work to sort of support our communities and in different states around the country. You know, health services came out and handed out hand sanitizer and also, you know, face masks. And, you know, on some of the social media pages of the organizers, they put out and encouraged mob to go and get tested.
Yeah, exactly, brother. Oh. But see, black people have been stating the fact that racism is a form of a pandemic that you will agree with, brother.
Yeah, definitely not. That's so true.
Well, thank you very much for sharing, brother. Bo, do you know of any more Black Lives Matter protests happening in Brisbane, up and coming?
Well, we're yarning about some stuff now at the moment, this weekend. I think some of the mob are going to take it to the prisons and show some solidarity out to them mob out there. So some of the mob are going to go to the prisons and make some noise and then let the mob know we stand in solidarity. But then also, because of the high risk factor of prisoners, if one of them contract COVID-19 in there, because we have a lot of our mob who have pre-existing health conditions and chronic conditions. So we're encouraging people to deliver soaps and whatnot to the prisoners as well. So that's what we're going to do tomorrow. There's a really good page on Facebook called Clean Out Prisons. They're based in different parts of the country, and that campaign is to highlight what's going on at the moment with COVID-19 and also prisons as well. A lot of the people involved in that campaign are family members of Aboriginal people who have died in custody as well.
Exactly, brother. Thank you. Thank you very much for sharing, Bolu. All the best to you mob down there, 989. Thank you for sharing, and your family stay safe, and stay black, stay deadly, stay strong, cuss.
Likewise. Big shout-out to all you mob up there in BBM, and the rest of the week is deadly for your followers as well.
Too deadly, my brother. Take care, bro. Beautiful yarn there with the 989 Less Talk host and our fellow network, Black Network down there at BEMA, Brisbane Indigenous Media Association. That's Bo Spiro, also strong Indigenous activist and strong fighter for our mob, especially with the Black Lives Matter, and talking about the conversation about the Black Lives Matter protests in Brisbane, and also looking at the future marches for our mob. Have you saying yarn up strong here on National Talk Black? That deadly number here is 1-800-422-416. Yarn with the Baldy One, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from Recurry, your host for your daily program, National Talk Black. And we're live at the First Nation radio station here in Cairns. Us, BBM, Bumbabrip Media, 98.7 FM. Go across the nation. Thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. Give the Murray a call. Let's have a yarn, your mob, 1-800-422-416.
My name's Raven, and you're listening to Talk Black on BBM 98.7 FM.
Yes, a very good morning, your daily mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from Recurry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns, BBM Bumbabrip Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. You can have your Sabre call us on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. All right, so to speak, a new sheriff in town in regards to Craig Crawford, MP, Minister for Queensland Fire and Emergency Services, as well as a new portfolio, Minister for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Partnership. Got him on the line. A very good morning, Craig. How are you?
Good morning. I'm very well, thanks.
Thank you very much for coming to the program. Look, very important portfolios you have in your hands, and me being a First Nation man, excited to hear about your position and what you can do for our mob up here in Far North, but the whole state. Tell us about your role there, and give us a bit of background there for our mob here, please.
Yeah, look, thanks. And look, something that I'm very proud, very humbled, obviously, to be the minister for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Partnerships. Now, it's a second ministry for me, so it runs alongside with Queensland Fire and Emergency Services and Disaster Management and everything like that. But I do think that the two roles actually complement each other, particularly up, right up in the top end. I'm Cairns-based, so I know all the locations. I've been to most, nearly all of them now, in various roles. So now I can have conversations with the same people, not only about how to stay safe and protect communities in those, times of natural disasters, but also about those other, significant cultural issues that have been, burning along now for quite some time.
Well, exactly, and you say burning along, but you said wearing the two hats there, have two conversations, you could say, with the mob when you're on country, about protecting country, but also about issues for First Nation people in all facets. When we're talking housing, we're talking employment, we're talking health and all the above. So really robust conversations need to be had.
Oh, look, absolutely. And this is the key, and right now is the perfect time to start, with National Reconciliation Week now and Sorry Day yesterday as well. So, this is the time, and conversations is what it's about. And if anyone who's been certainly tracking along and seeing some of the news and the talk around the Tracks to Treaty program, so the Queensland government wanting to be able to progress towards a treaty between First Nations Queenslanders and non-First Nations Queenslanders, and that's going to be a lot of talking. That's going to be a lot of sitting down. That's going to be having to come up you know, with a common story, you know, and so, you know, it's a big path, but I think it's something, you know, that we need to, and we can't really resolve everything until we resolve that one. I believe. I think we've got to get that one moving. So that's something I'm pretty keen to progress.
For sure, an excellent statement there in regard to where we're living at the moment in regard to the space we're living in 2020, here we are, and we're talking COVID-19, and in regard to the, you could say, hiccup, the hurdle that's turned our world upside down, in regard to First Nations priorities, that doesn't go away, that conversation doesn't go away, and we need to keep the conversation alive and strong while we're balancing act with COVID-19, yeah?
Yes, exactly right. And, you know, COVID-19, you know, a lot of this work has continued on behind the scenes. COVID-19 has meant that we've had to shift some of the priorities, certainly around keeping First Nations Queenslanders safe. So everyone, you know, in communities would understand that. They've got the Biosecurity Act in many places. But it's also not just First Nations Queenslanders that are in communities. It's also ones that are in, you know, parts of the capital cities as well. And so it's about all the dialogues with everyone, making sure we can keep people safe. So a lot of work happening on the biosecurity stuff, a lot of work happening on the road coming out of COVID. But at the same time, there's a lot of other big projects moving along on the side. So tracks the treaty, like I talked about.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, all these things, you know, housing, you mentioned housing before, health, alcohol management plans, local thriving communities, local decision making. We've got a whole lot of new mayors now that have just come, yep, into a variety of councils. You know, so, you know, there's a lot of work, but I'm pretty confident that we've got the right people in the right places. I'm very, very happy about, you know, the talk that I hear, certainly from some of the senior people in my portfolio, and the wishes that they have, and the big one clearly is that local decision making happening instead of Brisbane or Cairns just telling everyone how it will be, and we are starting to move that dial, and I'm pretty excited about that.
Well, the old phrase, well done is better than well said. So, yeah, we need action, and hopefully you're the man can deliver. When we're talking about COVID-19, our deadly leader in regard to the Premier, Anastasia Palaszczuk, still got restriction regarding Queensland and regarding COVID-19. It's about keeping the state safe. She's doing her job. You support her in her actions there?
Oh, absolutely. You know, particularly if you look at all the communities that use Cairns, particularly as a point, you know, to fly in and fly out of. When you start talking about relaxing state borders, that means that you could start having tourists from Melbourne and Sydney who will have COVID-19 because they've got plenty of cases down there that they can't get control of, and they'll be mixing through the same airport in Cairns as people who could be travelling in and out of community from Lockhart River and Bamaga and all sorts of places. And so I want to make sure that we can keep Queenslanders safe. And I know that's the Premier's number one goal as well. And I think she's done a fantastic job of doing that. We're looking at the Biosecurity Act situation right now, and we're working with the federal government. Ken Wyatt's been really good in this space in working with us, particularly in Queensland. I know he's been doing a lot of work in the top end as well, across other states, about the right time and the processes to be able to, you know, relax some of those rules in the communities where they want it relaxed, because not everyone does. And
sure.
But, you know, making it so that, you know, things are fair. And I'll give you a good example. There was a case a couple of weeks ago at Palm Island where Palm Islanders couldn't put their boat in the water to go fishing, yet everyone from Townsville could put their boat in the water and go fishing. And, you know, clearly that was inappropriate, and we managed to get that one fixed. So,
and it's good to hear that, because when you talk to our mob in communities, the talk and the feedback we're getting is it's one rule for one, different rule for another, and we hope that's not the case. When you look at somewhere like Yarrabah, people are travelling in here in Cairns, are going to Cairns Central, do the shopping, what have you, but they're not allowed to leave the community in Yarrabah, but people are coming in, deliver services. They're thinking it's one rule for one, different rule for another. You agree?
And look, and there shouldn't be one rule for one and one for the other. And the Biosecurity Act, which is that act that puts all those restrictions in place, it's a federal government act, and there's not a lot of wiggle room with it. It's like a big steel shutter door that comes down. And it's obviously designed for a good reason, and that was to absolutely keep COVID-19 out of community. And that's been successful. But now, as the country and the state is obviously, in the world for that matter, is starting to, you know, come out the other end of COVID, and as we're seeing, you know, relaxations on things and how you can travel and where you can go for dinner and what you can do, the Biosecurity Act doesn't give us the ability to make many of those changes. So we're putting a process in play. It's been happening now for the last probably about a week and a half, 2 weeks, with all of those affected communities where they can do their own work inside community with their own leaders, and then they can come to government and say, this is what we want the rule to be for our community. And then we'll turn that into a chief health officer's directive, and then that will then become law. And it means that different communities can have different rules,
yes,
about different things, and they can be changed as they need to move along. And, again, this is a classic example of local decision-making being made by the people in community, not the people in Brisbane.
Exactly, and you can understand the all our mayors in the position that they're in, a juggling act in regarding adhering to the rules and laws are in place, but also trying to keep the community safe, but also wants a bit of freedom for their constituents, yes?
Exactly. And look, you know, big cheerio to the mayors out there. There's a lot of new mayors, particularly in Queensland. You know, they were elected during COVID-19.
Exactly.
You know, and now they, you know, some of them have got, you know, some very, very serious decisions that are sitting in their hands at the moment. They've got to be able to, you know, work with their community, work with the elders, work with their council, work with state government departments about what rules and measures do they want to have in their community, you know, and these are big decisions when you think about it, you know, like this is a decision that may allow COVID-19 to sneak into their community or not, and they've got to balance all of those things between health, between freedom, between economics and a range of things. And look, you know, we haven't just thrown them out there and said, go for your life, you know, sink or swim. You know, there's a huge amount of support behind them from all of our agencies, particularly DATSIP,
yes,
but also, you know, police and the others as well. And I'm quite confident that, you know, that they will make good decisions, you know, in the best interests of their communities.
Fantastic. Look, great talking with you. Thank you very much, Craig. Please do keep in touch. Congratulations once again on your new appointment there, Minister for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Partnership, as well as the portfolio with the Queensland Fire and Emergency Services. Good luck with it all. Keep in touch. Stay safe, you and your family, and we'll be talking soon, Craig.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. A beautiful yarn there with Craig Crawford, MP, Minister for Queensland Fire and Emergency Services, and Minister for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Partnership, which is a new portfolio that he's picked up since the resignation of Jackie Trad. So looking forward to yarning with that man in regard to First Nation people and our quest for future life in regard to all aspects of life, employment, housing, health, all the above. So a serious conversation need to be had with the Minister for Queensland Fire and Emergency, as well as Minister for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Partnership, and that's Craig Crawford, MP, and also he's the MP for Barron River. To Delhi, have you say your mob here on your Delhi program, National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416, live here at the First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns, BBM Bumper Brip Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. Have you saying yarn up strong, 1-800-422-416.
It's time, Australia. Time for recognition. See, before our dark past, we had a black history. Now, I ain't pointing no fingers and I ain't pushing no blame. I ain't silly. But what's happened in the past is time for recognition and work together. It's like this. They'd rather compensate us than give us recognition. In other words, they'd rather buy you out of your tradition. Cause when you recognise, that's how your culture survives. Many millenniums and thousands of tribes around the fire. Like a robbery, the writings of walls. It's like the troops in the past. They would rather us all dead, but we survivors. Through the spirit of my ancestors, thousands of years from behind us. Yeah, that survivors. Through the ignorance and arrogance, the miseducation divides us. Product of environment. Before all with the grogs and the drugs. It was dreams that would guide us. Now we're stuck in violence. Prison system confine us. Genocide undercovers. The stolen kids under silence. No wonder we tyrant. Revolution is now. Australia can't stop us. We're taking back what is ours. Genocide, it was genocide. See the pain in my people's eyes. Steal my culture, deny my pride. But we survive, better recognize. Genocide, it was genocide. See the pain in my people's eyes.
Yeah, there it is, Benny Binar, the survivors here on your daily program, National Talk Black. Have your say, Yarn Up Strong. That daily number here is 1-800-422-416. Call that number, Yarn Up with yours truly, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, your host for your daily program, National Talk Black. And we come to you live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns, BBM Bumbabrip Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. All right, too deadly. Now, the Coalition of Peaks launches website and social media to engage Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities on closing the gap. We're going to catch up a yarn now with Deadly Sister, Professor Muriel Bamblett, AO, Senior Coalition of Peaks member and CEO of Victorian Aboriginal Childcare Agency on the line. Professor Muriel, good morning, my sister. How are you?
I'm very good, Trev. Great to be here.
Fantastic. Great to have you. You're based down in Melbourne, are you?
Yep, and we've got sun shining down here. Which
I was just going to say, how's your weather? But sunshine's good.
It's freezing. Well, it's, yeah, it's good. It doesn't mean it's warm like in Queensland.
Thank you. Yeah, it's nice up here. I've been singlet and broad shorts, so it's all good, my sister. Aww. Listen, before we start, don't mean to tease you, but let the mob know who your mob, where you're from, Professor.
Look, I've got obviously ties with a lot of groups, family groups from Tungurong, Boonurong, Yorta Yorta, Jaja Rung, but I have ties obviously with family in Wiradjuri, and so I'm very blessed to know who I am and where I come from, and so proud of every day to be a strong Black Aboriginal woman.
Beautiful, fantastic. You wear a few hats now. One of the hats in regarding the Senior Coalition of Peaks member and also CEO of Victorian Aboriginal Childcare Agency. But we're talking about the Coalition of Peaks launches the new website, social media, to engage Aboriginal Torres Strait communities on closing the gap. Are you there, Professor? I just lost Professor Muriel. We'll try and get her back online. We're just opening up the conversation in regard to the Coalition of Peaks launches new website and social media to engage Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities on closing the gap. But we'll get Professor Muriel Bamblett back online. AO, can I say AO? Yes, a title that she's received and the work that she does for our mob. And look, how you say, a professor in her field, but also a strong professor in regard to rights for her people. And it's great to have a deadly sister on the airways and Yarn and here on National Talk Black with Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry. We'll get her back online and Yarn Up Strong here on the First Nation radio station here at Cairns, BBM Bumbabrip Media, 98.7 FM. And this is where we hold the talks with National Talk Black, a tool for our people, you mob. And Yarn Up Strong, add to the conversation, 1-800-422-416. A lot of yarns we have on First Nation radio stations across this country, all our deadly black networks. A lot of yarns are not robust and strong and open in regards to mainstream radio, so it's a very powerful tool for our mob. But your mob can have your say, add to the conversation, 1-800-422-416. Stomping Ground, Warrumpi Band, here on your daily program, National Talk Black. I'm going to try again with Professor Muriel Bamblett AO on the line. You there, my sister?
Yeah, I'm here.
There's a virus on the phone, but we're good. We're tackling it. We've got the vaccine. As our telephone line is connected, it's all strong here. Listen, so thank you. Our conversation regarding Coalition of Peaks launches website and social media to engage Aboriginal and Torres Strait communities on closing the gap. Look, using whatever tools, whatever meaning, a medium that's upon us that we can use to promote our stance in regard to closing the gap. And here's another one, sister.
Yeah, look, and I would say that the Coalition of Peaks have really appreciated all of the work that, you know, our media station, media outlets actually do around getting the message out about closing the gap, the conversations. But we also recognise that we need to make sure that all of these media stations and that we use every type of medium to be able to engage our people around understanding that we're focused on addressing the really big issues. But, you know, like as with COVID-19, it's been our media that have been able to have the greatest and get, you know, into communities in language, in being able to, you know, get the message out about that, you know, no service could do, no government could do. And
so sure, thank you.
I think it's in recognition of, you know, the role that you play, but it's also about we need to think in the future as well, how do we invest and get greater engagement? And so the Coalition of Peaks have had a really strong commitment, and there's always been a recognition of the role that, you know, the website, our website will play in engaging people, but also having our social media and the work of, you know, all of our media in making sure that we're on track, that you keep us accountable. And so we've done a lot of work really to be able to make sure that our people get the message, because people often, governments and that, only talk to the Aboriginal organisations, but this is an opportunity to hold ourselves accountable to our people, not just to government and to everybody else.
So exactly.
And so we've set ourselves a really ambitious agenda. We've really sort of tried to focus on, you know, some of the things that will really change. And so whilst we've got the targets, we've got some really broad reform agreements, you know, that we're also aiming to meet, you know, have signed off by government, and that is really the determining of greater investment in Aboriginal community control. And that doesn't just mean just giving funding. It's about how do we actually change. The other ones are around the role of mainstream. We know that we can't deliver every service, so we can't run the hospitals, we can't run education institutions like schools, but also what's their role in getting outcomes, particularly education and health outcomes. We've also got one on data integrity. So, you know, people feed us data all the time, and it doesn't actually tell us anything that we don't already know, that we've got an overrepresentation.
Well, we're used to surveys, aren't we?
That's right. And so what we're looking at is how do we actually get better data. But I think for me, you know, having worked in a, you know, in an organisation that has to deal with the system, and I think, you know, the Black Lives Matter actually thought about this, is we've got to be able to address systemic and structural, you know, transformation of current systems. And I think we've, you know, this will challenge Aboriginal communities. You know, do we want to be fence sitters and let people do it for us? Or do we actually want to be a part of a system that doesn't work for us and work out how do we change it? So those are some of the key bits of work we're doing. We're also looking at, you know, workforce, what's our workforce needs for the future, because you can't build a service system without thinking about, like, what are the workforce needs? We're going to need more child protection, we're going to need more health, we're going to need more people in justice, more people in education. We also know that what comes with that, in order to house these workers and communities, we need capital infrastructure, but we also need capital infrastructure for housing, because there's a major strategy around housing and homelessness and coming up with a response to that. We know also that service provision, our people are less likely, you know, to get access to the services they need, particularly in rural and remote communities, so we're looking at service provision. But again, for me, the big one is governance. How do we actually manage and hold governments to greater accountability for outcomes? And so the Coalition of Peaks has been really working with nutting out the final agreement and getting the broader tightening up. How do governments actually allocate funding? Who makes that decision? How do we inform that? And so accountability measures, responsibility, and these things, these are the things that we're looking at, that we've been looking at nationally. And so we will be challenging the states and the territories and the Commonwealth to go away and actually, you know, not just say you're going to close the gap, but actually close the gap.
Well, when we say closing gap, we sound like a broken record, but it is what it is. There's a lot of unfinished business, and the government needs to adhere to, as well as all black people in this country, stand up and have action.
Yeah, but often in the past, in Close the Gap, they've consulted us. We're sitting at the table now, and we've been arguing ferociously about what the target should be, and it is under the leadership of, you know, Pat Turner and a strong coalition, and each of the states have put up strong Aboriginal people, and they have, we have been fighting to say we want voice, but we want greater accountability to us, not just to your systems, not just back to your ministers, but actually we want to take something to the community. So a lot of the work we're doing at the moment is actually looking at trajectories, and so it's setting... Often people say, oh, well, we've got 10 years to close the gap. Well, we're saying, no, you haven't got 10 years. By the end of this year, this is what we want you to achieve. And by the end of next year, this is what we want you to achieve. We don't want you to say, oh, yeah, we've got 10 years to do it. So whilst the agreement is a long-term, we're setting very clear, you know, achievables with along the 10 years. And so actually projecting what needs to change at the end of every year. And the government needs to report back to us on what they're achieving within each year, so that we don't have this constant, you know, the Prime Minister stands up and says, well, despite, you know, all of our investment, we still haven't been able to close the gap.
Yeah, thank you. We're sick of that broken record too, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. And so we as Aboriginal people don't want to be hearing that either. We want to hear, you know, we want
solutions.
We want to know that, you know, we're changing, you know.
Exactly.
But the only way it's going to happen is Aboriginal people standing up. And, you know, like, we need to have Aboriginal people really be forthright. It's going to challenge us, because we're going to have to start to think about, all right, we know we live in, you know, with non-Aboriginal people every day, but how do we actually change a system that's racist? How do we how do we, you know, change a system that's overly, you know, intervening into our lives and, you know, dismantling our communities and taking away the very fabric of who we are? And so I think that requires our communities to take a stronger focus in how do we do it without losing the fabric of who we are. We don't have to be, you don't have to leave your Aboriginality at the door to change a system. It has to change to the way that we want it to work. It can't be a white... We can't have our system continue to impose white values, white principles, white practices on us.
Exactly. Now, the Coalition of Peaks launches a website. So what's the website there, Professor Muriel?
Well, I think our website is, as we said, we did consultations with the community, and so we've got this new website. It tells the story of the Coalition of Peaks, why we formed it, how it's community controlled, who we are, what it's about. It talks about our partnership. So we've been on this journey now for 2 years. So it is a Coalition of Peaks, and it's got obviously part of all of this partnership agreement, it explains it. So it introduces the fact that we will be meeting as the Coalition of Aboriginal Peaks, but we'll also be meeting with states and territories. Good. And so we'll be looking at the planning, but we will also be meeting as a joint council. And so that will be with ministers, first ministers of each state and territory, all of the ministers for Aboriginal Affairs. So we've already had a number of those joint council meetings. So we were pleasured at the last meeting that we were able to have before COVID, to have, you know, three Aboriginal ministers in the room who were ministers for Aboriginal Affairs or for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people across the nation. And so
having the right people at the table, very important.
Very important. And so at the heart of the work, we want to be able to reassure people that the voices and priorities of our communities are there. So we really built this website so that our people and communities could be a part of the coalitions and at work. We will be updating it when the new agreement. I urge people to get onto the website, because when the new agreement comes out, it will come out and be able to reassure people that we've worked really hard during this period. Some of the policy people that we have on board are amazing. They've driven us, they've worked for government, they understand government systems, but they've got really social justice, racial injustice, all of those areas at the forefront of thinking about how do we actually close the gap.
Exactly. You've got the right people at the table with the right minds, but also I'm feeling the right heart as well.
Well, I think that, you know, like, you've got warriors, I think. You've got people like Pat Turner, you've got Cheryl Axelby, you've got, you know, Vicky O'Donnelly, you've got Katrina Fanning, you've got people that, you know, they're soldiers, they've been in the battle, they've been in the ditches, they've been fighting for years, and so you look across our nation and, you know that, you know, obviously some of those people, you know, have been in part of the Uluru Statement from the Heart, have been, you know, part of marches and, you know, all of those issues. But I think, you know, like, we've got our challenges today. I think we've just been advised that there may be a COVID, maybe someone that marched on the weekend.
In Melbourne, yeah, attendee.
Yeah, yeah. So now, you know, like...
Puts a spanner in the works, but we knew it may come.
If that's true, why haven't we as Aboriginal people been told about it? Why
exactly?
Why would you get that to us first rather than give it to the age?
True.
And so there's a bit of uproar from VACHO.
There
and
is.
So, you know, they're on the warpath at the moment.
Lovely. So, I've got to keep moving, Professor. Really, thank you very much for sharing. All the best to you, my sister.
Time to test the metal about, you know, as well with our social media and also our, you know, Aboriginal organisations. So I think that these are times that you fight not just
exactly. That's Professor Muriel Bamblett AO, and talk about the Coalition of Peaks launches our website and social media to engage Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities on closing the gap. Fantastic. You can have your say in Yarn Up Strong here on National Talkback, 1-800-422-416. We're talking biodiversity conversation in your backyard. We're now going to have a talk in Yarn with Dr. Laura Manu, Vice Chancellor's Postdoctoral Research Fellow in the Centre for Urban Research, RMIT University. On the line, Dr. Laura, very good morning. How are you?
Ah, very well, thank you. It's sunny here.
It's sunny, fantastic. It's sunny up here in far north Queensland as well. Thank you for coming to the program. Now, biodiversity conservation in your backyard, please explain. You there? Dr. Laura, hello?
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Dr. Laura, I'm hearing you. Can you hear me? Phones are playing up. We'll try Dr. Laura again. Dr. Laura Munmore is her name, Vice Chancellor, Postdoctoral Research Fellow in the Centre for Urban Research at RMIT University. And we're talking about biodiversity conservation in your backyard. So we're probably talking about the medicine, so to speak, in regarding living in our own backyard, that we can keep ourselves safe is the conversation I'm going to have with Dr. Laura. We'll try and get her back on the line. But look, stay tuned to your daily program, National Talk Black. 11:51 here in far north Queensland, 9:40, and got 9 minutes to go for the program. But we'll try and have a deadly yarn with Dr. Laura. Too deadly.
G'day, this is Guy Sebastian here, hanging up on our National Talk Black, your big yarning show, BBM 98.7.
Yeah, Guy Sebastian, thank you for the promo there. It is National Talk Black, and I'll try again with Dr. Laura. Got her on the line, and we'll put her through to the panel, and we'll continue with our conversation. Dr. Laura, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you, fantastic. Now, we're talking about biodiversity conservation in your backyard. Please explain.
Yes, so another name that we use for this is called wildlife gardening. And it's really about adding features to our own garden or backyards to foster the locally native plants and animals in the landscape to which our garden belongs. Something that I think particularly in cities we are disconnected from.
So we can foster these special plants and animals native to our neighborhood, yes?
Yes, we can. You know, like us, animals and plants need water and food and shelter. And so if we provide these things, we actually help them, you know, to live good lives in and around our homes. And we get to experience and better understand what their lives are about.
Well, a healthy planet, healthy human beings, yes?
Absolutely right. That's right. Because our well-being is really connected to caring, as you would well know, caring for land,
yes.
But also caring for members of our community. And what we try and do, so I've been involved in research about wildlife gardening in cities particularly, looking at how we can support that to happen.
Well, gardens can happen in the concrete jungles, what you're saying.
Absolutely right. So it's about looking and seeing. My university here, RMIT, is in the middle of Melbourne, but even so, there are trees, there are insects. You know, if you open your senses to the sights and sounds and smells, and then begin to meet the people that can help you learn how to foster them, you'll start seeing it everywhere. But if we don't do something to support it, you know, they will start disappearing, and they have started disappearing.
Sad. So we have got the remedy as human beings, but we also can be the enemy, so to speak.
That's right. That's right. And not always deliberately.
Sure.
But yes, I think in our what we see is our need to you know, have many, many more people living in certain areas, and to really, I think people nowadays, many people just look at homes and houses as buildings and spaces and places to sort of dominate and live in, and not really recognize that it's the land around all of that that's really important too.
Well, as long as you've got a piece of dirt, you can grow something natural, yes?
Yes, that's right. Grow something for your food, but also, you know, by supporting those plants, you support all the different insects that are attracted to those plants. And those insects are food for birds and mammals and other
yes.
things. So, yes, it's really a matter of seeing that patch of dirt, as you say, as an opportunity.
Mm. Well, it's about protecting, loving Mother Earth and nurturing her. We can have a healthy life, so to speak, is what you're saying, Doctor.
Yes, yes. And, you know, it's particularly in cities, you know, lawns. We put in lots of lawns because they're easy to mow and they look green. But for locally native plants and animals, they're actually like deserts. You know, they don't provide shelter or protection. And even insects, they just love having shrubs and bushes. And so having all these layers of green is really another important way that we can foster a diversity of life around us.
And that could be the so-called vaccine for COVID-19 in a way, in disguise, yes?
Well, particularly for mental and spiritual
true,
health.
True, exactly,
yes, that's
exactly.
Very true.
Lovely. Thank you very much for the conversation, Dr. Laurel. All the best to you and your deadly team and your family. Stay safe, and we'll yarn soon.
You too. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Dr. Laura Amunmu, her name is, and Vice Chancellor, Postdoctoral Research Fellow in the Centre for Urban Research, RMIT University. And the biodiversity conservation, it was a conversation about the conservation in your backyard. You, Bob Murray, going to sign off here. Thank you very much for your company here on National Talk Black. Back in the hot seat again tomorrow, that deadly number 1-800-422-416. Otherwise, 24/7, you can text the brother 045-714-0550. And don't forget our webpage as well, BBM987FM. To Deadly Mob, thanks for yarning and thanks for your company. And we'll catch up soon. Stay black, stay deadly, stay strong, stay safe. We're still not out of the woods regarding the virus. We don't have a vaccine. So stay safe, you mob. To Deadly.
What's the colour of our flag? Red, black and yellow. What's the colour of our flag? Red, black and yellow.